Now, with the biodiversity, I have a friend who's studying Clark's nutcrackers, the bird, out in Wyoming, and they're seeing a reduction in white pines. The white pine population is dying in Yellowstone. And so what they're finding is that they're being killed off by the pine beetle because the pine beetle's not dying because there isn't enough cold and frost. And so the hope is that if there's a repopulation of this bird called the Clark's nutcracker, that they could repopulate the white pines, because the Clark's nutcracker has this sharp beak that pries open the pine cones, eats the seed, and then kind of repopulates. So, do you see hope in biological research about these very reflexive relationships in biodiversity, or is there anything exciting going on? It's weird after you're talking about like mass extinction and how dire the situation to be like, what's the exciting part of the research? But I mean, do you know of different projects where even in the face of extreme dire conditions that these researchers are finding interesting things about, yeah, relationships or potentials for repopulation of different species?
Well, we've always had change occurring. That's probably the operative word. So we've had mass extinctions before. All the time there's this play between, being able organisms to be able to maintain and find habitat for them to survive in. So it's the normal course. We're going to have species that are going extinct all the time. And there's this dynamic competition among species for resources. But we know we've had mass extinctions before, and we've recorded them. And I guess my only hope as a biologist is we don't end up with a runaway greenhouse where no life can persist on the planet, or that we retain enough biodiversity that when things settle down, we can repopulate the diversity of life on the planet. And so I think what we have now, there was no magic why it should be here. I mean, Carl Sagan, I think he was one of the guys that said, Earth didn't know we were coming, didn't care we were here, and we will make her bleed and she will throw us out. So this arrogance of us being the pinnacle of anything is kind of a bad interpretation of what we know about the history of life. And so I know I almost had people walk out from a seminar I gave one time before, and I said, we're all highly evolved, just like a bacterium or an E. coli in human beings. There's really no difference in evolution. This guy says, I can't believe you said that. And he walked out of the room. I mean, we often think of ourselves as the pinnacle. Well, we're just one of many pinnacles, and pinnacles change. So it's, it's a dynamic situation, and we've been very fortunate, as I said to Dave and I, we've lived in the sweet spot for human beings.
Just a little while ago, here in Troy, New York, there was a lot of white fuzz that was blowing in the wind, and it piled up on little corners and places like that. And those were seeds from trees like aspen trees. And so here are these seeds that blow in the wind, and they start new plants in all these strange places. And so that kind of biodiversity has a chance of surviving some of these big cataclysms that are happening. Now, whether those particular seeds or their offspring make it or not, who knows? Whether our particular seeds and offspring make it or not, who knows?
Do both of you have opinion? Well, I'm sure you do, but on what is to be done? I mean, I feel like the traditional activist model, I mean, you're both professors, researchers, solar boat builder, it's like I think that we're programmed very in, I don't know, I don't want to make a huge generalization, but to do something. And definitely within the activist world, it's like, have a meeting and then write a letter. And it just feels like we're just so beyond the traditional, the situation again is so serious that we're beyond the traditional methods of activism. So Extinction Rebellion has had some success in the UK. New York City just declared a climate emergency. The UK did, although there's no consequences for people who violate these climate emergency declarations, which is a little crazy. But do you feel, it sounds like you were saying before, Carl, that there is a need for revolution. You talked about French Revolution. So what do you both think about what is to be done? Or is there just nothing to be done and we're just in a period of grief, acceptance, or denial?
Well, I'd say something that comes up rarely is population.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't a problem I can think of that wouldn't be easier to solve with fewer people. And that's just not talked about very much. And the second part of that equation is just not the number of people, it's what they consume, how they live. And we're way out of bounds in terms of both of those, the number of Homo sapiens on the planet, particularly in developed countries and the United States. We are obscene consumers. And I think that unless we talk about those problems, they're kind of the driving principles for what happens. In the United States, what would be a sustainable population? And I've heard different people talk about it, but 50 million probably is a pretty nice number. And if we got down, we're at 330 million. So if we had 50 million people, you could imagine we would be releasing far fewer heat-trapping gases. We would be causing less and less extinction of biodiversity, both in confuming and taking over habitats. So I think those are kinds of things that those are things we could really do. They might not help us. We're going to go through this terrible bit, and a civilization recreates itself after, and there's enough resources or whatever else for this to happen. If we had a few fewer people, it would be a lot easier. And yet there's something people think is sacrosanct about. You can't tell people, or they can't work out as for a culture to have fewer people. And if you look at some of the places around the world, there's a little island in the Pacific called Tokopia, which actually, or Tokopia, I don't know the correct pronunciation. The island was not very big. They're stable. Their population could be stable at about 1,000. And they eventually figured out that they needed to have about 1,000 people. And they ended up in a ritual reading, which something they thought came from the gods, which explained to them that they had to, every child, when any couple was thinking of having a child, they had to think about that in terms of the rest of the people. In other words, what is going to happen if I have another child, my significant other and myself? And we don't seem to want to interfere with that. It seems like it's our God-given right to have as many kids as we want to have.
Pop cultural news, Miley Cyrus came out this week and said that she's not going to have children because it's just such a burden on the planet. And more and more activists, it's interesting to have a celebrity, you know, and of a certain generation say that, but a lot of activists have been having those debates, you know, it's tough. But, yeah.
I met my first person when I was at Friday Harbor in 1970 in Puget Sound, and this couple said, we are not going to have any children, because I could not imagine having a child have to live through what the future is going to be. And that was a few decades ago. And I think that a lot of us discussed how many children we should have. I think now maybe I probably should only have one, maybe none. We ended up having two. So population and consumption are big topics that we really need to think about. And maybe it's not too late. I don't know.